Jacksonville gets a poor grade on clean energy. Good morning and live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this hour, why Jacksonville received one of the lowest clean energy scores of any city in the U.S. We'll take a look at that report along with your calls. Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, don't miss the live in-studio performance from the cast of The Wiz, the new show at Players by the Sea. But first this hour, all this week, WJCT is proudly participating in Covering Climate Now, a global collaboration of more than 250 broadcast, print, and online news outlets. The effort is spearheaded by the Columbia Journalism Review and The Nation to strengthen the national and local media's focus on the climate crisis. Now, this coordinated coverage week culminates on the day of the United Nations Climate Action Summit in New York on September 23rd. As part of our continuing coverage, we are discussing climate-related issues on the show just about every day this week, and that includes energy efficiency and promoting clean energy use. But when it comes to those two imperatives, Jacksonville ranks among the worst cities in the nation, according to a new report. WJCT's Brendan Rivers has more.
Cities are the center of economic and cultural activity, so they're responsible for a lot of the country's greenhouse gas emissions. That's why the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy studies them, says senior research manager David Ribeiro. He says its 2019 City Clean Energy Scorecard shows a lot of communities are prioritizing energy savings and emissions reductions, but the River City isn't one of them.
Jacksonville was unfortunately in the bottom 10, so they came in at 66 out of 75 cities with a score of 16.5 out of 100 points.
That score puts Jacksonville behind every large city in Florida. Top in Florida, Orlando scored 51.5, making it the 15th best city in the nation. While Ribeiro says adopting clean energy policies and improving energy efficiency will help fight climate change, the benefits go beyond the environment.
Last year alone, I think more than 2 million people worked in the energy efficiency industry. So by embracing these strategies, embracing energy efficiency, it's really a pathway to creating more jobs in your community and creating more economically vibrant communities.
Ribeiro says leaders in Jacksonville should use the scorecard to look at what other cities have done, and residents can use it to engage with their elected officials on specific actions. Brendan Rivers, 89.9 WJCT News.
As we take a closer look at this, we welcome Brendan Rivers to Studio 5, and on the line, Stefan Samaripas with the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, one of the study's authors. Guys, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
Sure, thanks.
And here's our question to callers. What's your reaction to the new report showing Jacksonville is one of the lowest-ranked cities in the country when it comes to clean energy? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open as well. Stefan, let's begin with you. It's not good to hear that Jacksonville is in the bottom 10 of your scorecard. You rank the largest cities in the U.S. on efforts to achieve a clean energy future and reduce carbon emissions. What could Jacksonville be doing that it isn't currently doing to score better?
Well, so the scorecard looks at a variety of different policies and programs that cities can undertake to reduce greenhouse and greenhouse gas emissions.
Speakerphone, Stefan, if you could, get off the speakerphone and talk right into your receiver. Go ahead. Okay, while he's doing that, Stefan, Brendan, why don't you weigh in?
They recommended a lot of things. So they point out they have very few clean energy policies right now in Jacksonville. The main recommendations they have are focus on reducing energy waste and government assets. Those are buildings and sort of infrastructure that the government uses. Pursue clean energy policies like community-wide greenhouse gas emissions reductions, energy savings, and renewable energy goals, adopting energy saving requirements, and trying to encourage transportation shifts, so maybe more public transportation, things like that.
Okay, it's 549-2937 to join us. You know, it's interesting in your reporting, Brendan, which people can look at WJCT.org, most of the cities that they analyze for this scorecard have privately owned utilities. Of course, in Jacksonville, JEA is city-owned. You would think that would make it easier for the city to improve its energy efficiency game. But JEA, as you report, is not prioritizing energy efficiency as it plans for the next decade. What about that?
Right. And so that's something that you had me on to talk about recently. JEA is one of several Florida utilities that recently proposed to the Public Service Commission energy efficiency goals of zero or near zero. JEA, in JEA's case, it was a goal of zero. And while they are proposing that, I mean, that's for the next decade, the goal that they're trying to set at zero. They are using some solar panels. They have plans to build more solar energy to boost their power, but it's not where we need to be.
Not anywhere close. In fact, look at the difference between Jacksonville and Orlando. The scorecard ranks Orlando the most energy efficient city in Florida and the 15th best in the nation. What is Orlando doing?
I'm not as familiar with what Orlando's policies are on this front, but I know that their leadership there, their mayor, they've kind of jumped onto this, and they're getting a lot of support from the community to pursue these energy efficiency and these clean energy goals.
And so let's go back now to Stefan Samaribas with the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. Stefan, when we look to a nearby city like Orlando that's scoring so much higher, what are some specific examples of how city leaders there are making this a priority that we are not seeing in Jacksonville?
So in Orlando, you see a number of different things that the city is doing. On the energy saving side, energy conservation, from an energy conservation perspective, the city's doing a lot to make sure that buildings are benchmarking their energy use, taking stock of how efficient the buildings are, and then working to make upgrades in terms of efficiency or maybe operational improvements that can reduce energy use. Another thing that the city in Orlando is doing a lot of is working to install a great deal of solar capacity throughout the city. The city, through its municipal utility, is working to has had a bulk purchasing program in place for a good while. So the city's working to really reduce the cost of installing solar panels on roofs and doing so by sort of buying those things in bulk on behalf of their customers.
Brendan Rivers, you reached out to City Hall about this scorecard. Any response?
So that's kind of a long story.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So about, I think it was 2 months ago when Abakar sat down.
That's our former reporter, Abakar Adan.
Right. When he sat down with Mayor Lenny Curry for a one-on-one interview to talk about a lot of big issues that have been going on in Jacksonville right now, Lot J, JEA, the landing. And I asked Abakar to ask a few questions about the Storm Resiliency and Infrastructure Development Review Committee and the Adaptation Action Area Working Group, which are two of these committees in Jacksonville that have been looking at how to protect infrastructure and future development from sea level rise and flooding. Mayor Curry had not been sort of briefed on what those committees have been doing up to that point. So he told Abakar to let me know to get in touch with his people to try to set something up in the future after he had been briefed on these issues so that I could talk to him about sea level rise and climate change. And his scheduling person reached out to me shortly after that in early August and said, yeah, we'll figure something out. He's out of town this week, but we'll get it set up. And then I followed up several times, didn't hear back, reached out to some other people in his press office, trying to set something up to talk with him about these issues, and just have not heard back.
Haven't heard back yet. So we haven't had a response then yet from city officials on this. Stefan Samaribas, can you explain why city leadership, whether it's Jacksonville or any other large city, needs to make this a higher priority? Because not only do cities generate a lot of emissions that are impacting climate change, and certainly here in Florida, that's a major concern, but becoming more energy efficient is good business as well. So there's a business case to be made. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, making your buildings more energy efficient, finding ways of encouraging folks who live in a community to undertake, to drive, let's say, more fuel-efficient cars, those ultimately save cost to the consumer at the end of the day. And in addition to that, growing your green workforce, increases a jobs by a great number. Also, one other thing to consider, too, is that, you know, energy costs really fall heaviest, whether we're talking about, you know, transportation-related energy costs or, you know, building-related energy costs, oftentimes fall the hardest on low-income households. And, you know, reducing, you know, we take a look consistently here at ACEEE at energy burdens and how those affect low-income households. And oftentimes, those low-income households pay a tremendous amount more of their income towards their monthly energy bills than higher income households do. So reducing energy use for those households can help lift people out of poverty and improve low income outcomes on a variety of different measures.
Let's go to your calls now. What are your reactions to the news that Jacksonville is ranked one of the worst cities in America on a clean energy scorecard? Orlando, down the road, one of the best. What are your questions? 549-2937. Dave is at the beaches. Hi, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. The rush to sell JEA kind of reflects the problem that you all are describing, in that the JEA board approved evaluation criteria for potential sale or privatization without having any environmental metrics in those evaluation criteria. And the city council is the body that should be setting those metrics, not the JEA board. So there was a meeting, I guess, 2 days ago where city council started to express concern about being bypassed in this process. And I think, and they mentioned pension funds and other things, but the environmental metrics are absolutely critical to getting a good deal. So I would suggest that the city council suspend this whole invitation to negotiate bidding process until the council has had a chance to have a public dialogue on what the environmental metrics for this community should be, so that we're not last on the list, but we're leading by example.
Thanks, Dave. Brendan Rivers, what about that? Here's a tweet from a listener, meanwhile. It looks like JEA has just given up on achievable savings for energy efficiency.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems as if this environmental conversation is really lacking in a lot of areas in Jacksonville when we're making these decisions, whether it's policy wise and having to do with JEA. So I think to Dave's point, yeah, I think that's a great idea to really involve the public, because people are starting to pay more attention to this and to really get concerned. And JEA is supposed to be a publicly owned utility, so the people should have a say.
Have a say in this. And here's another factor for you, Stefan. Brian tweets the show. One of the factors in this study is transportation and compactness over urban sprawl. It looks as though white flight hurts the environment. So does white fear of reliable public transport, dreaded as increased mobility for everybody. Can you talk a little bit about transportation policies and how they factor into this scorecard? Of course, Jacksonville is a city that doesn't have the best public transit network. People need a car for the most part to get around. How does that factor in?
Yeah, so when you do look at Jacksonville's transportation network, particularly its transit network, as you're mentioning, funding for transit in the city of Jacksonville is low compared to other cities across the country, and it's one of the lowest. But, you know, here's the thing, is that, you know, there's a lot of room for improvement when it comes to things that Jacksonville, you know, could be doing. One of the things that the city is already doing is taking some steps to encourage dense development around the existing transit network. But there's other things that, especially to the individual's question, that the city could do to especially help those who are lower income, you know, gain better access to the transit network. So, for example, encouraging affordable housing in close proximity to transit stops and other things along those lines.
And when you put this scorecard out and you let cities know how they're doing, what kinds of reactions do you typically get from different cities around the country when they see how they are not scoring as highly as they thought they might or as they would like to score?
So we get a variety of different reactions when the scorecard comes out. You know, I mean, we certainly one of the things that we're always encouraged to see is that a lot of cities that maybe see that they're in the bottom end of the rankings that we put out with this scorecard are often encouraged to do more to improve their score and improve their ranking on the next scorecard that comes out. Our next scorecard will be coming out next year. A good example of this is San Diego, which made it their goal after they saw that their ranking in a prior scorecard was pretty low. They made it a goal that they wanted to increase by several spots, and the mayor there made it a priority for city staff to undertake initiatives that would improve the score. And sure enough, on the next scorecard, they were the most improved city in the scorecard.
Well, that's good to hear. It's 549-2937. How concerned are you about the new report looking at Jacksonville's clean energy scorecard? It's a pretty bad grade. Brendan, would it be an F or more like a C or a D?
Well, I mean, it's a 16.5 out of 100.
Out of 100, that's an F. We're flunking, in other words. And so let's talk a little bit about why this is important in the context of a worldwide climate strike taking place all over the globe this Friday, with dozens of events here in Florida alone, including several in Northeast Florida. And then B, the United Nations meeting next week on climate change, because cities are big drivers of emissions. So this is an important metric to be aware of.
Absolutely. I mean, the story of climate change, it really boils down to clean energy and to energy efficiency, because we all need energy. Energy is kind of the lifeblood of our civilization. And at this point, it's responsible for the vast majority of the greenhouse gas emissions that are causing climate change. So we need to start somewhere. People need to find ways to reduce those emissions. And cities, like you said, they're probably the main cause. So they need to really step up and start coming up with ways to reduce this problem.
And Stefan, that's everything from energy efficient buildings to energy efficient city fleets, for example, improving the public transportation grid. There are a lot of factors that go into this. And making change is difficult and expensive, at least in the early going, right?
Well, in some cases, that's it can be a more costly undertaking. That's not always necessarily the case, though. For example, you look at a lot of cities that are undertaking energy performance contracts with companies, where companies will take on the initial lion's share of the cost and return energy cost savings to cities in that case, on the back end. And some are more costly for sure, but there are some options that are more affordable for cities to undertake.
Like what?
Well, aside from the energy service contracts that I mentioned, you'll see a number of cities that are doing things along the lines of, just in terms of consolidating what they're already doing. One of the conversations that we have oftentimes with cities is that, across departments, there isn't really a consolidated or comprehensive effort to think about, upgrading buildings or improving, let's say, operation and maintenance of those buildings so that they're seeing energy savings at the end of the day. These are things that are already being undertaken by city staff, but there may be opportunities to improve efficiency of how staff approach those things, improve training for staff, and those can be relatively low cost. And not only does it improve the efficiency of the buildings that staff are working in, let's say inside a city, but it also improves the knowledge and the capability of the local energy efficiency workforce.
Here's an email from a listener. Maybe it's not a bad idea to sell JEA after all. Perhaps the new owner would actually undertake measures to move Jacksonville into the 21st century. Brendan Rivers.
I mean, I suppose that's a possibility, but it's
a risk. Would a privately owned utility be farther out on this?
It's certainly possible. There are utilities around the country that are prioritizing this and doing a lot of great work. But you would think, If it's owned by the city, the people that are elected to represent the city determine what JEA does. So if it stays that way and this is important, then you vote for people who prioritize this, and then they make those decisions that would actually have a big impact in this sphere.
Increasingly, whether it's this issue or a host of other issues, there's a growing narrative that's taken shape in this city that the elected leadership of Jacksonville, whether it's city council or other boards, is not listening to the will of the voters on a number of issues.
And that may be the case. And part of the problem is it, I mean, what was the turnout in that last election? You know, the voters aren't speaking out enough. They're not making their voices heard.
They are speaking out on this show, though. It's 549-2937. Mariah is in Riverside. Hi, Mariah. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to touch on this conversation. I feel like there's little things that, you know, other cities that I've traveled to are doing, like bike lanes and easy to find trash cans on every corner and just little things like that, that I feel like kind of add to the bigger picture. And I just see a total kind of lack of that, especially I live in Riverside, which is, should be super bike friendly, but there's not bike lanes. I don't feel really safe riding my bike instead of driving my car. And then also in terms of transportation, I feel like so many of the bus stops are just benches and a sign, and it's not like inviting for people to want to take the bus. Like if it's raining, if it's too hot, if it's cold outside, like there's no shelter. And I feel like that sort of is an indicator as well of like our lack of forward thinking in terms of the environment and trying to encourage people to make other choices than maybe getting in their car or things like that.
Sure. Thanks for that, Mariah. Stefan, there are lots of little things, little decisions, whether it's public transit or other matters, where culture and priorities, where a city shows what it values, what its priorities are. How do you make change, not just on the policy front, but also culturally?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we look at consistently, and this is an area where Jacksonville can improve in terms of the metrics that we're looking at, is we take a look at how cities are leading a community-wide effort to plan for green initiatives, for energy efficiency initiatives. And at the moment, there's very little that Jacksonville's doing to lead a sort of community-wide effort. And by community-wide, we really do mean, and this is what we look at in our scorecard, is not only just, you know, conversations that are happening among and within government leaders at the local level, but we also are looking at, you know, how government leaders involve folks in the private sector, individual citizens in that discussion and in that process, and make sure that they're considerations that what they want to see in terms of, let's say, bike lanes or improvements in transit accessibility, you know, that those things are heavily considered and have a place in the decision-making process for those plans. So there's certainly a lot that can be done, whether transportation or just looking at, you know, community-wide at a lot of different energy efficiency and clean energy initiatives.
Lots of comments on our Facebook page, Brendan Rivers. Here's one from Perry. 15 years ago, I emailed the head of JEA and suggested they try to partner with home and commercial builders to incorporate solar panels onto the roofs of all new construction, as well as anyone who wanted to put them on their house or building. JEA pays for the panels, bills customers monthly, and that includes a certain amount of free electricity, and any excess it generates flows to JEA for free. Win-win for all. Never heard back.
I'm based on what Aaron Zahn has said and some of what JEA said, especially in these public service commission meetings, it seems as if they see demand side solar energy as an obstacle they have to overcome to become profitable.
Here's a tweet from Matt or a Facebook comment. Please discuss fourth generation nuclear thorium and liquid salt reactors. Stop deliberately limiting the discussion to a binary one. Either or, fossil fuels versus renewables. Such zero sum arguments insult the listener's intelligence. Stefan.
Well, I mean, as far as, you know, what we look at in our research for the scorecard, we have a specific look at any sort of, you know, approaches in terms of generation, electricity generation that are reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So, we do look at, not only the installation of solar panels or wind energy systems, but we do also, in some places in the scorecard, look at the creation of nuclear energy facilities or keeping those facilities maybe online if they're, under consideration for decommissioning.
So that is part of the discussion, part of the portfolio.
Yes, that's right. And it does depend certainly on, where cities are as to what maybe might make sense for that particular city. For example, there may be tremendous untapped opportunity for solar energy or wind energy in a place that maybe hasn't, been properly considered. And so it's always a matter, I think, for cities of taking stock of, what resources they have most available and sort of what's going to be the most cost-effective way to generate electricity for their customers.
Here's a comment on Facebook from Paula. It seems obvious to me why Mayor Curry routinely blows off all input about resilience and environmental issues. We know that he's hitched his wagon to a man who wants to bring back coal and thinks climate change is a hoax. Okay. That's seemingly a reference to President Trump. Brendan Rivers, let's talk about the politics of this. We have a Republican mayor, former chair of the state Republican Party of Florida. And while this shouldn't be a partisan issue, unfortunately it is.
It is, but I think in Florida, it seems to be a little bit different than around the country. I just got back from Nashville, a fellowship with Inside Climate News, and I met with a bunch of other reporters from around the Southeast, and we were talking about challenges we were facing, and most of them said they get a lot of pushback from listeners and people and readers in their area saying climate change is a hoax. But in Florida, we don't really hear that argument anymore. We hear climate change is happening, but it's not man-made. And that kind of seems to be the argument that I hear a lot from some politicians. And I know I've heard Lenny Curry, and he's talked about climate change, and he's talked about sea level rise. I haven't, like we discussed, I haven't been able to sit down to really discuss these issues with him. So I don't know whether
he has acknowledged the issue. And Stefan, so have most political leaders in Florida, from the governor on down. But as Brendan says, if we don't have agreement on what's causing climate change, doesn't that limit ability to act on it and its negative impacts?
I think if you're, with any problem that you're facing, you have to have an agreement on sort of, what that problem is due to in order to figure out, certainly how to best address it. And so, a lot of the metrics that we look at, the activities that we look at in the scorecard, are all certainly looking at, the process of climate change from a perspective that there are things that we can do that will reduce greenhouse gas emissions and mitigate any sort of negative effects from climate change, decades out from now.
Ray is in St. Augustine. Hi, Ray. Good morning.
Jacksonville is a pretty conservative area. And as you pointed out, the politics and interest in energy conservation tend to go together. So possibly if people were more interested up there in voting and maybe a change in administration, there might be a little bit of improvement in Jacksonville's energy efficiency rating. Just a few thoughts. FPL, I know our utility down here, has gone in a big way into solar power farms all around the country. And I don't see much evidence of that happening up in Jacksonville. So maybe breaking off the JEA and letting them become independent of the political climate, the conservative climate up in Jacksonville, might be an improvement in Jacksonville's score. Just a thought. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Ray. Okay, Stefan, this report is online at our website, wjct.org. Any final thoughts for listeners?
As folks are looking to mobilize, to do something about climate change, there are a lot of good recommendations, good examples of what cities are doing at a local level. And one of the things even that maybe individual listeners might want to consider taking a look at is, there are a lot of cities that are partnering with local organizations, local community groups, and it would be good to take a look at those initiatives and those approaches to start thinking about maybe what individuals can start doing and ask of their government leaders.
Thanks for that. Stefan Samaripas with the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, one of the study's authors, and our own reporter, Brendan Rivers. You can find all of this information on our website at wjct.org. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, a bill to put Florida on a path toward 100% renewable energy by 2050 has again been filed for the upcoming legislative session. Ryan Daly reports, even though the measure died last year, its sponsors are hopeful that a shift in tone by Republicans in Tallahassee is a good sign.
Democratic Representative Ana Escamani and Senator Jose Javier Rodriguez are the measure's principal backers again. Escamani says it's something that both parties can get behind.
This issue transcends the altruistic nature that many of us carry to care about Earth and actually really dives into the economic need to do something because it's a job creator to pursue green energy, but again, also because the cost to do nothing is huge.
Escamani and Rodriguez point to potential economic upsides to moving towards solar. It's something they say appeals to conservative and libertarian-minded lawmakers. Rodriguez says in Florida, unlike states like Texas,
there are not jobs in oil and gas. This is a solar state.
Yes.
If we break the stranglehold that the utilities have on energy policy here in Tallahassee, we will unleash jobs in renewable energy. I will tell you, the solar installers in my district, it is a booming business.
Rodriguez notes a shift in tone from Republican state leadership. Specifically, he referenced comments by incoming Republican House Speaker Chris Sprouls, who says his party shouldn't shy away from pursuing solutions to climate change. Though Sprouls calls Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's wide-ranging Green New Deal utter nonsense as a solution. Escamani drew contrasts between her bill and the Green New Deal.
Versus the Green New Deal that has very specifics on public responsibility, our bill is very small. It's two pages, and all it states is that the Commissioner of Agriculture under her department will convene a committee that has a state goal for 2050, but then we craft a Florida way to get there.
Committee weeks are underway at the Capitol ahead of a January start to the annual lawmaking session. I'm Ryan Daly.
And up next, co-working spaces for women take off in the city. We'll tell you where next.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In rural Guatemala, many people boil their water to prevent waterborne disease. That often requires tending an open fire inside the home for hours a day. These fires cause dangerous indoor air pollution and a lot of carbon pollution. To help people access clean drinking water without boiling it, a company called Ecofiltro sells low-cost countertop water filters.
There's a measurable and definite significant greenhouse gas reduction when you don't have to have a fire going to boil water all the time.
Mark LaCroix is with Natural Capital Partners, which helps track how the filters are being used.
We have one of our employees running around Guatemala in a pickup truck monitoring. We're constantly monitoring the filters to make sure they're working and that the families are using them correctly.
His company also helps other businesses invest in projects like this one, as a way of offsetting some of their own carbon emissions. In the case of Ecofiltro, the investments help reduce the cost of the filters, making them affordable for rural families. He says over time, people can actually save money by buying less firewood. So it's a purchase that pays off, financially, for people's health, and for the climate. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
While it's true that public radio stations rely on a small amount of federal and state financial support to cover operating expenses and infrastructure, 33% of WJCT's fundraising is provided by our local listeners. Federal support helps stabilize the NPR system nationally, but your donations help us maintain the quality and diversity of programs you hear locally. It's all because of you. So donate today at WJCT.org. Make sure you hear the whole picture with WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville will soon have its first co-working space catering to female entrepreneurs. It's called Sen Con Cowork, and it's a community hub and business accelerator designed for enterprising women here in our area. We're pleased to welcome business owner Lakita Brooks with more. She's the owner of Therapytopia. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And let's take note of the fact that American Business Women's Day is coming up September 22nd. Entrepreneurship among women is up 114% over the last decade. And Florida is ranked number one in the country for the fastest growth of women-owned businesses. So Sen Con Cowork is coming along, it sounds like, at the right time.
It is the perfect time. So many women are transitioning from the workforce to, I guess, improve their quality of life, to have more time for family and work-life balance, and also to earn the income that they feel like they deserve.
That's right. Women want control over their time. They want a flexible situation, often because they're balancing not just raising kids, but caring for parents. So Sen Con Cowork is designed for women, and it's open to everyone, though. But tell us about Sen Con, because it's located downtown at 311 West Ashley Street. There are already some cowork spaces in that little urban core footprint, but what makes this one different?
As you said, the first thing is it is designed for women. There's a conference area, retail space, offices. So if you decide you want your own personal office, you can have your own office. But you also can have a virtual office if you decide, hey, I'm new to business, I'm just getting started. It has different programs specific to women. And like you said, it is open to men, but it is heavily driven towards women. And also what our different needs are, even to the point of having space for breastfeeding.
You've got a lactation lounge.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's, I don't tell this story very often, but when I was working at First Coast News after my first daughter was born, there was no space for breastfeeding, breast pumping, I should say. And, you know, this is a little personal, but yeah. I had to just go in the bathroom and go into a bathroom stall to do that. That was before a federal law was passed mandating that workplaces had to set aside a location for women, nursing mothers. Little things like that make a huge difference for women in the workforce.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just one example. Okay. So tell me about your business, Therapytopia, because you're a female business owner on the rise.
Yes. And I will also be in Sen Con Cowork. So I'm really excited about that. So at Therapytopia, is all about helping busy, stressed, overwhelmed professionals practice self-care, like take time for you. Because in life, so many times we're putting everybody and everything before us, and we never even just think about, what do I want? What are my desires? Maybe I just need a moment to just woosah.
To just what?
Woosah.
Woosah, what's that?
Just like exhale.
Exhale.
Yes.
Don't we all need that, Lakita?
We do. Oh my gosh.
Everybody is desperate for that right now. So how do you counsel your clients to do that? That's your business. How do you do that?
Well, the first thing we start out with, what's going on? I allow them that space to just get it off their chest, whatever they're dealing with. And then we think about different solutions and also even schedule time in their weekly schedule for themselves. So even if it's on your drive home, take a moment to stop at the park, sit at the waterfront. If you just want to sit in your car at the grocery store, just take that time for you if you're extremely busy. But just being conscious and mindful of it, I think that's the biggest thing, because we're just on autopilot. Have you ever just drove home and you don't even know how you made it home?
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that speaks to so many people. Now, getting back to Sen Con, if you are starting a business or growing a business, if you're a freelancer, a flex timer, a remote worker, anyone who needs a productive space to elevate your work, this is a good solution, because co-working is a model that the business community has just wholeheartedly embraced. It really offers a solution for a business owner or someone who needs to get out of the house to do some work and interact with other professionals. So at Sen Con, you've got, I'm assuming, a mix of public communal space and some private space and meeting room space. That seems to kind of be the sweet spot, doesn't it?
It is. And I think with some co-working spots, it's just virtual or it's just co-working, but we actually have offices and ongoing workshops that's based on the needs of the women and anyone else who decides they want to attend, because it's about helping everyone that's within the CENCON family to grow.
How affordable is it?
Extremely affordable. The lowest package is roughly
$59. $59 a month?
Yes.
To rent a co-work space for your business?
For a virtual office.
For a virtual office. Okay, so does that mean that you can come in and work there every day if you want to, or as often as you like?
It varies.
It varies.
But I would definitely say check out the website at CENCONCOWORK.com to get more information about all the specifics. But it is extremely affordable for those who just have a business idea and you're like, you know what, I want to get out of the house. I might still work my regular 9-to-5 job, but I want to start doing something for me to elevate my brand, elevate my business, and to generate additional income.
Now, CENCON Co-Work is not opening until January of 2020. There is limited access to founding members, people that get in on the ground floor, beginning next month, right?
Yes, and honestly, it officially opens January, but we already have some members that are part of the CENCON family with virtual spaces. And also, I'll be moving in the month of October, so that's very exciting.
Yeah, not only that, it looks as though you're building partnerships with women's and professional organizations, including the Moore Myers Children's Fund. That's a partner of First Tee. You're going to be providing golf education programs to educate women on the benefits of golf as a networking strategy. That's pretty cool.
Yes. And you can be cute and have fun and network. I mean,
what? You can't go wrong. You can't go wrong. Okay. So as you said, the website is CENCONCOWORK.com. And this brand new co-working space in the city is located at 311 Ashley Street downtown, at West Ashley Street. It's currently in renovation and design, but it's soft opened already and will open for real in January of 2020. And it's good timing too, with so much happening downtown. Are you excited to be based in the urban core as well?
Extremely excited. Loving the energy downtown, all the opportunities. And it's just, like you said, it's just the perfect timing, even when it comes to American Business Women Day coming up. And
that's right, which is next week. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to check out Lakita's business, go to her website. She is CEO of Therapytopia.com, Therapytopia.com. And the new co-working space in the city for women is CENCONCOWORK.com. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
In a moment, it's a taste of the weekend here on the First Coast from our own Damian Lamar. Plus, don't miss a live performance from the cast of The Wiz. We'll be right back.
Cypress Village, a continuing care retirement community, features apartments and homes surrounded by lakes and walking trails, minutes from the beach and adjacent to Mayo Clinic. 901-4222. More at lifecare.brookdale.com.
Vistar Credit Union, committed to offering its members home mortgage options that fit their life. Vistar. We never forget that it's your money. Information available at 777-6000 or vistarcu.org.
It's easier than ever for authoritarian leaders and bad actors to weaponize information. Troll farms, bots, dark ads, deep fakes, new tools are changing politics and crushing dissent. Peter Pomerantsev was born in the former Soviet Union and has studied the war against reality. How do we fight back? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. British House of Commons Speaker John Bercow is famous for this.
Order! Order! Order!
But keeping order has been a challenge as Parliament debates Brexit.
The Speaker is not a player in the match, but its referee or umpire.
We'll speak with John Bercow next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 here on 89.9 WJCT.
It's easier than ever for authoritarian leaders and bad actors to weaponize information. Troll farms, bots, dark ads, deep fakes, new tools are changing politics and crushing dissent. Peter Pomerantsev was born in the former Soviet Union and has studied the war against reality. How do we fight back? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, if you haven't made weekend plans yet, never fear. We've got some ideas from someone with his finger on the pulse of the First Coast. It's Damian Lamar, the host of our own Taste Test here at WJCT. He's got a little taste of the weekend for us. Hey, Damian, good
morning.
Happy
Friday Eve.
Happy Friday Eve. That's a good way to put it. All right. Yeah. Let's start with music tonight at the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall. It's local natives.
Yes, tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall in partnership with Jax Live. We're excited about the great local natives group who is out of Los Angeles. They're an indie rock group, and they're going to be here for their Spiral Concert Tour. So I'm very, very excited. These guys are really, really good. Nice, airy harmonies.
Yeah.
And crowd favorites for sure.
For sure. And Ponte Vedra Concert Hall always books great stuff. So go see local natives tomorrow night. That's in Ponte Vedra. Let's look ahead to Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Bold City Havana Nights.
Yeah, Saturday's jam-packed. There's a lot going on Saturday. And of course, we've kicked off the Hispanic Heritage Month as of September 15th. And everybody's encouraged to dust off those fedoras and join Bold City and the Wild Things for the annual Bold City Pint Night, benefiting the Jacksonville Zoo and Gardens. That's going to be from 6 to 9 on Saturday and is a fundraiser, free and open to the public. All of you and your amigos are encouraged to show up.
And that's on Roselle Street.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. What's astronomical autumn?
Okay. So we obviously the first day of the autumnal equinox or fall, as we know it, marks the end of the summer. And MOSH is actually going to be highlighting all of the science behind this celestial phenomenon. There's going to be a beer garden with Wicked Barley Brewing Company, live music with Wurstbusters German Food on the rooftop, live history tours with the Five and Dime Theater.
And if you've never been on the roof of the MOSH, this is a good opportunity to do it because the view is amazing. It's unparalleled.
It's amazing, yeah. Right on the river.
That's a good time. Okay, the Ritz is marking its 20th anniversary Saturday night with an Aretha Franklin tribute. That sounds cool.
Yeah, so celebrating the artistry of the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, the late Aretha Franklin. There's tons of performers. And according the, actually, there's going to be a special appearance by the Tony Award winning Melba Moore. She's playing tribute and song to her friend and mentor.
That's a huge opportunity. Go see her. And then last but not least, your own amazing radio show, Taste Test, heard on weekend evenings here, is celebrating Hispanic Heritage
Month. My good friend, Janira Cardona, she is a local PR marketing maven, and she has curated a music show specifically dedicated to salsa because salsa is a dying art, as I found out recently.
Uh-huh.
So we have a 1 hour of salsa.
So listen to Taste Test this weekend.
Yes.
And thank you for giving
us a
taste of all of that. That's Damian Lamar. Finally, this hour, speaking of events, don't miss The Wiz, opening at Players by the Sea, tomorrow. Samantha Nelson, who plays Dorothy, and Jeremy Rakett, director and production manager at Players by the Sea, are here now with a preview. Hey, guys, good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Samantha, in a moment, you're going to sing for us, which is so exciting. But first, Jeremy, The Wiz is such a classic. Tell me about this production.
Well, The Wiz first started on Broadway, actually, before the film that we all know with Michael Jackson and Diana
Ross.
Diana Ross, yeah. I don't know why I was thinking of someone else.
Yeah, people think of the movie, but it did. It started on Broadway first.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the Broadway version is very much like The Wizard of Oz. So we meet all of the wonderful characters that we love that Dorothy meets along her journey. But it has more of an urban twist to it. And some of the names have changed slightly. The music is funky and so much so to the point to where you just can't help but get on your feet.
You can't help but love it. Yeah. Okay. So let's hear now from Dorothy. Samantha Nelson plays the starring role in the show. Samantha, what are you going to sing for us?
I'm going to sing As Soon As I Get Home, my first solo.
And here she is.
There's a feeling here inside that I cannot hide, and I know I've tried, but it's turning me around. I'm not sure if I'm aware, if I'm up or down, if I'm here or there, I need both feet on the ground. Why do I feel like I'm drowning when there is plenty of air? Why do I feel like frowning? Maybe the feeling is fear. Here I am in a different place, in a different time, in this time and space. But I don't wanna be here. I was told I'ma see the Wiz, but I don't know what a wizard is. I just hope the Wiz is there. Maybe I'm just going crazy, letting myself get uptight. I'm acting just like a baby, but I'm gonna be all right.
How about that?
She's wonderful.
Beautiful, Samantha. Thank you for that. Thank you so much. Go to playersbythesea.org. Get your tickets now for The Wiz, which debuts tomorrow night and runs through October 12th. Stars Samantha Nelson, Jeremy Rakett, director. Thanks for being here. Have a great show.
Thanks for having us.
That is our show, meanwhile. Thanks for listening. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for a look at all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening for some great music. We'll see you tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.